Well, hi everybody. How are you today? This is Mark Ciafardini. Thanks so much for joining the Go See Talk podcast experience. Man, we are joined by our synth heavy friend from across the seas, Steve, Opus Science Collective. We grew up watching films and learning the music of the man we're about to speak to, and I'm just going to cut right into it. We have a fantastic guest. We're getting the band back together. We're joined by Randy Edelman. He is the composer who's composed our childhoods. He's my cousin Vinny's second cousin. He's the third twin. He's the fifth Ghostbuster. He's the downtown downbeat distinguished gentleman, Randy the man Edelman. Welcome. Yep. Great to see you again.
Good to see you.
Well, how's things been in your world?
They're good.
Excellent. You got the shades?
Not the shades. My glasses I left in the house, and these I have on now. They're special things I can see my little notes with.
I think you have a way of seeing the world that, you know, if you were to watch any of the movies that you did music to without the music, it would just be an unmitigated disaster, but you just weave this magic, and I think
it's... That's the way I saw them. I don't even remember.
Well, we are glad to be speaking with you again. Like I said, Steve and I are big fans, but the last time we spoke was a big high point in our lives. I do also want to start off the podcast by congratulating you on 50 years of prime cuts. This is one hell of an album. Tremendous work, left and right. Like to save that to the end, let you be thinking about maybe some, you know, going way back machine, think about what went into that. But why don't we start this off with one big piece of our preference for film and musical childhoods. Can you go back to the day that you met Ivan Reitman, and what about that meeting made you say, we're going to be friends, we're going to do this a long time?
Nothing.
Nothing.
It was the opposite of everything you said.
Really?
Wow. Oh, yeah. It's too long to get into, you know, how these things happen, because obviously that was a break that led me into that, even though I had done stuff. And obviously I had years, I had years and years of other stuff, and it could have happened long before that with the film thing, but it didn't. And I wasn't necessarily really... Not that I wasn't interested. I was interested in anything musically, but it wasn't a dream of mine. And so I wasn't looking for that to happen. And when I met him, it was on a small film that a dear friend of his had directed. And I did that. And that's how I was introduced to him on the steps of his office in Warner Brothers. And I had no idea that I would ever work with them at all that day. And that's how I met him. And then they called me because he was doing a big, big, huge, high profile project called Twins. And they asked me to do something, which I was happy to do, having no idea that it would turn into something else. And that turns into the story of Ivan and I, you know. So it's not anything like you just said, like I met him and we fell in love, and no.
you didn't promise them 100 million rainbows?
My God, that's incredible. I love that song. No one ever heard that song. Well, no one ever really heard that album. But that song, wow. Yeah, nobody knows that stuff. Okay, you guys are good. And, you know, usually, to be honest with you, for years after I started doing the films, I never told anybody that I ever wrote a song. They never even knew I wrote songs. Any of those people I worked with, only the people in England who knew me from those records there. The other people didn't know I wrote songs. I never wrote a song in 20, 25 years for any of those films, because that wasn't my job. And I had no interest in writing songs anymore. So I used to, when someone would ask me about, like, you, I'd say, let's not talk about that. That was like 100 years ago. People think I'm the son of that person. But anyway, but it's okay, because you said what you said. That means you really did listen. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead. Ask me a question.
With anything, there's a, I wouldn't call it a change in industry or change in profession, but it has some learning curves. And I was just curious, having this little transition, what were some of the things that you had to sort of come up to speed with?
Okay. What transition? I made a lot of them. Which one are you referring to?
Oh, scoring a picture.
Oh, No. The thing is, here's the thing with me. I say that I fell into things. I had no, but I didn't fall into being a musician. And that's what it's all about. So when I was fortunate, when I was confronted musically with anything, I was able to meet the challenge. There's other people who, so in other words, if it was anything musical, whether it was conducting, orchestrating, being an accompanist, I was into it. But that's how I approached it. It wasn't about any particular plan. So as I said, when that happened, and like I said, I had been around for years doing a million things. You may say, oh, you were successful, but I wasn't, I didn't have that kind of success that, you know, you make an album, the album comes out and it sells them, you know, wasn't like that. So I kind of got my chops together musically in all areas. So when that happened, I'm using the thing you asked me about with Ivan, I was well prepared for it. And actually, to most people, they were in shock because fortunately, I looked a lot younger than I actually was. For instance, right now, I'm 97 years old, but I don't look that. But anyway, so they didn't know about my background as a songwriter, a singer, or anything. So I was just like the new guy in town. But of course, I really wasn't. And I had years of experience doing a million things. So I was able to adapt myself. And that's kind of been my thing. But you can't do it if you're not into it. So anything musical, I was, you know, I had a good feeling for it. And even though it was difficult and pressured, I was able to do it. Whereas some other people who are wonderful at certain aspects, they get confronted with something and they run, you know, because they go, oh boy, that's pressured and that's hard, you know, and then and that's fine. You know, I was just able to do that transition, but it really wasn't a transition. It was just like the, you know, the aspects of it and the notoriety of the people involved in the movies. But musically, I was well prepared for it, you know.
The exciting thing about any endeavor is the, not to say the unknown, because like you said, you've already had the tools, you had the talent, you could be able to perform. But you know, when you're penning something on a piano or you have some thoughts that you want to turn into words, it's a different type of I wouldn't call it manipulation, but manipulation in a film, it's you're trying to elicit something that's there on the screen. So do you feel that it's more liberating to write your own music when it is so compared to a movie?
You know what? Funnily enough, when you say that, first of all, writing songs and writing film music, they're completely different. It's as big a difference as painting a picture and writing song. You know what I mean? Has nothing to do with it. Scoring a film involves many areas that you don't need to even know about. Songwriting is totally instinctive. Let's face it. You can't write a great film score in 3 seconds, but guess what? You can write a great song if you have the right idea and you're sitting there and you have a certain feel. Now, I don't really mean 3 seconds, but you know what I'm saying. So it's a completely different animal. Writing scores is 100 times harder than writing a song, but that doesn't mean that you're going to sit down and write a great song. You may write 100 songs and none are great. You know, what is great? It's something that, you know, people respond to lyrically and melodically. And so it's a totally different thing. And by the way, people, I never, ever, ever, because I just told you something, I didn't write a song for years. I never mix the two. It's not like, they're completely different animals. And that's the way I would never even approach it like that. I mean, I would never, ever play a song for somebody a director who I'm scoring a film for. I mean, they'd laugh at me. And it, like I said, it's my job to enhance each scene that they think music is necessary to, you know, to do something emotionally, to make it better and to enhance whatever their vision was for that part of the film. So songwriting is, you know, they don't, and there are no songs in movies, as you know, anymore. None, you know, there are records that they stick in for a montage or at the end of the thing once in a while. But it's not like it used to be where someone wrote a theme and it was Moon River. You know what I mean? It's not like that anymore. So different.
You mentioned the word respond not too long ago. So what, how do you, when you, what's your litmus test for when you're, when you are composed, whether it's pitching to Rob Cohen or Ivan Reitman or Tom Day, how do you know something feels right? Does it feel right to you? Does it feel right once you see it in the picture? Was it the director nodding his head?
Did you just say the word pitching? Did you use the word pitching, that I was pitching to somebody?
Steve, can we get a
read? Well, I think what he means is when, you know, you've got your brief, you come up with a first draft of what you're doing, and then you run it by the director.
No. That's right. Okay, so I was right. That's what he was saying. Okay, I didn't mean I'm trying to sell them something. So no, it doesn't work like that at all. You don't have time for anything like that. You got to see something. You got to write. They come over. It depends. These guys, each director, I mean, you mentioned one guy. I won't repeat his name again. You know, total, you know, forget it. And I like the people who are and were experienced, because they are not insecure. Any time, and it's surprising how many people, especially years ago with these comedies that I never thought I was particularly funny. You may think I'm funny now, but not in my music. And I started doing these, you know, big comedies. So I, then comedies are much harder. Dramas are easy because they kind of, dramas are action films. They kind of dictate what to do. You mean, comedies are different because you don't know what it is to play or where to play it. So that's a problem. But anyway, you don't have a lot of time. So yes, they come by and they listen to something, but then you get into a whole other area, which would take too long to get into, where you're, as you say, pitching. But it's a difficult situation. Years ago, composers didn't have this stuff and the technology and samplers, and they couldn't play a cue. How did everybody, all those years of that brilliant music, all those guys that wrote, you know, 2 hours of nonstop music, how did they do that for a director? All they had is nothing. They had a piano. That's it. What did they do? Whistle a tune? Of course not. So there was a certain amount of trust there between a director and a composer before they went on a film stage, where they used to have the big studio orchestras. But anyway, so it's kind of a dog and pony show when they come over, and it depends who it is. You know, it depends who it is, what their day's been like, how much pressure they're under, and which movie it is, and how on top of the picture the studio is as far as the release and the marketing and stuff. But normally, you don't have a lot of time. You basically, I could spend a year on every score, and maybe I have a week, maybe I have a month. I have as much time as they give me, and each situation is different. So you do the best you can. And then there are great people, like somebody like who's the best, Ron Howard, you know? Mm. Ron Howard, the great Ron Howard. He's done a million things. He's just great. Did he ever come by? How about not once?
Wow.
That means he didn't care? Absolutely not. He hires you and he trusts you. That's it. Now, other people, they wouldn't believe that. Every day they're at your door. And after they leave and you think they're gone, they're back an hour later because they started freaking out. And then guess what? You don't have time to write, because writing films is all about, you have to look at something and you have to write. And it's got to be fast and right. Now, that's hard. If it's fast and wrong, that's no good. Or if it's slow and right, that's no good either. So you got to do it fast, and it's got to be right. And therein is the problem and the difficulty. But that's, you know, you just got to do it. It's got to be instinctive. Anybody that does this, whoever it is, it's, you know, you look at something and you have an instinct for it. And if you don't have that, you may not even be a great musician, but if you have that, then you kind of are on the track. I mean, you can be a great technical musician and not have the ability to do that. So you have to have that, you know, everybody who does this, or that you're kind of in a minute, you're found out and that it's gone. They're not at your door anymore.
And so when a director like a Ron Howard, who does care about the music but trusts you enough to just leave you to it, is that level of trust, is it validating, or is it kind of, does it come with its own amount of pressure?
No. It's no. It's there's no pressure. That's the whole
Okay.
point. You're left to your own devices, in which case you write twice as many things, and it's twice as good as it would have been with the. You don't need the pressure. It's
It's
enough pressure.
like,
It's enough pressure just being okay. It's today, and you got to deliver it in 4 weeks. That's the pressure. If they never come by, you're still under the pressure. It's just
yeah.
that it's nice to know that you're partially, and then there are other people who you're, or people that make you send things. No, I don't do that. You want me to send it? There's the phone. Call somebody else.
Yeah.
You can't
Right.
do. And which people say, well, then you can't work in this because it is a collaborative. I always think film writing is collaborative. You know what the collaboration is? They made the picture. It maybe took them 20 years or 5 years or 3 months. They shot it. The director shot it. They cast the actors. You see the style. You see the actors. You watch a cut of the film. That's to me, guess what? I mean, sounds terrible. That's the collaboration. I'm looking at what they did. And then I'm collaborating with their image, not them coming in here and me playing them something and say, I thought something different and maybe we should do what I did on the temp score, which is a whole other issue, which I won't get into. But, so that to me is the collaboration, which puts me in a certain area that I right now, that's the way I do it, so anyway, yeah, the film thing so is completely different than songwriting or anything like that. And recently, I never even dreamed I got back into the songwriting, so I'm having a blast.
Which do you find more enjoyable or more rewarding?
Well, the film scoring is very rewarding. I mean, I'm over at Abbey Road with the London Symphony or something like that, and there's a particularly really involved, musically satisfying cue. That's great. You don't get that feeling from songwriting. You write a song and you feel good right then, because when you're done writing it, when I'm done writing at the piano, it's done. Now you got to go and record it and record it a certain way. But it's a completely different thing. And it's nice hearing a song. I always liked when people covered my songs. I considered that a, compliment. Never bothered me.
Do you have a favorite cover of one of your songs?
I'd say normally, not really. I mean, I could think if I sat here. The mere fact that I have to think of
Fair
somebody
enough.
being probably that I don't. But I always got a kick out of it because the songs of mine, when I was first doing that and, trying to come up with, the only thing anybody cared about, they didn't care about an album. That what did they care about? They care about a hit single. Now I understand that. So I wrote certain things that are the only things that I think, are not good. And what's great is that these songs that certain people covered of mine, they're all different. There's not like one and 50 people covered it. And they're not ones that would seem overtly commercial, which I like. So, I never really got anything but, a kind of a pain in the ass from the re record company. But now, and I guess now it's pretty much always the same thing. I mean, you need something, that obviously is a hook for people to listen to get them into the artist, whether it's rap or hip hop or whatever it is. It's still the same thing, but it's different. So that was my thing, which basically led me out of that whole thing because I just stopped. I mean, I'm the only person in the world to go into Clive Davis and say, Clive, I want a release. And when I say he was so great, he gave me a release. Why not? I wasn't selling any records. You know what I mean? And he was great, and we have a relationship. He just came down to my show in New York a few months ago. And so, but it's like, and I wasn't. It's not like I was going anywhere or doing anything. And I wanted to sort of transition into doing more of what I had envisioned myself doing when I got out of school. And I was basically a musician. I was playing on Broadway, you know, and doing stuff before that whole singer-songwriter thing happened, which was only kind of a means to an end, because if you wanted songs recorded, you had to do them yourself, because everyone selling records really by that time was obviously wrote and produced their own stuff. I mean, there were a couple of outside people that fortunately I was able to get through doing those albums to do my songs. But other than that, it was just like a fluke that I never sang a song or wrote lyrics or anything before I did my first album, you know.
You'd never sung before doing the album?
No, even in the shower. No, never. If you could,
the voice is lovely on that album.
Well, it's what it is. It's that I opened my mouth. This is an exaggeration, but I guess like in the late 70s, early 80s, I always say if you could carry a tune and write a decent melody, you just may get a record deal.
Yeah.
Now that's an exaggeration, but that's what it was. So you have a bunch of songs. You know, my girlfriend at the time dumped me, and I was walking around New York, you know, like it's funny now, but like I was seriously depressed, but I didn't know what depression was. I didn't have any money for pills because I didn't know what they were. I didn't know that you probably should go and talk to somebody, but I didn't know about that. And I didn't have any money to do that either. So I just went and walked around New York in the snow and was sad and blah, blah, blah. And so what did I do? I started writing these songs, everyone about this situation. And that was how I started. And that's what everybody, you know, that's how I started writing songs. Had there been a lyricist around or somebody interested, I would have had them write the lyrics, but there was nobody around. So I wrote the songs, wrote the lyrics, played everything, sang, and got myself a little record deal. And nice. That's the story. That's kind of how things, you know, went with me.
When you have an idea and it starts at the piano, it feels like that's the first thing that comes to out of your body. After all these years, do you still find it exploratory to find the next note, find the next stanza, or do you just sort of like, does it all go fast forward in your head? Do you have
No. I never think about the next note. I mean, you're asking about, like I said, writing film scores. That's a whole different animal. That and that I do all at once too, but I'm looking at a scene. I'm trying to do timings. I'm, you know, but writing a song, that's usually at the piano for me, and I have an idea. And I think it's probably like this if you talk to any people, that you have an idea, a musical. Like a musical motif, an idea, a melody, chord change. And usually there's some kind of lyric idea, not exactly the lyrics, that you relate, that's related to. That's how it works with me, you know? So I do it all at once. Then I may have to think about writing a different verse or a different musical idea for a bridge. But that's how it happens. But I usually have some words. Now they're like, a lot of people will tell you, you know, the words for a song are dummy words a lot, even if they're very moving. They're words that they had at the beginning, and it turns out they use them in the end. There's a million, the biggest songs there are, especially pop songs and commercial stuff. I won't, you know, that's a story all the time. And then you write a song around that music and that idea, which is not really that hard to understand, but that's how it works with me. I mean, I've recently got back into writing songs. I mean, I'm doing this new album now that I'm really excited about, but the songs are kind of, if you listen to it, you may think it's odd, because with this whole serious, all these, you know, 100 film scores and all, you know, not just the comedies, but big things like Last of the Mohicans and Gettysburg and horror movies and all kinds of things, you'd think maybe that the style of the songs may be a little different, and maybe one or two are, but the rest of them are like I call throwbacks, you know. There's a 60s thing, and then there's a dance band thing, and there's, I mean, just all kind of things that I have liked, and I turned the idea into a whole song. I mean, there's even a song called Birds of Freedom that's like a peace song. Now, did I start out and say, I'm going to write this song because the world is such a screwed up place now, and I'm going to... No, but it just started. There was an idea with a melodic sense to it, and it led to something, and then it came out, well, it's coming out, you know, sounding a certain way, but it's just, it's very pretty instinctive, and always whatever it is I'm doing comes out of the moment, the enthusiasm for whatever that is at the moment. And that's, film scores are like that. Well, film scores, you don't have any, there's no other way to do it because you don't have a lot of time and you're looking at something that someone's created. But even the songs are sort of, for me, like that now, you know.
Well, you, you have a line that says, thinking something's wrong because life can't be this fine. At what point in the composing process, I'm talking specifically about film, do you ever get to a point where you just go, God, I'm on a roll here. You know, like what hurdles? I mean, I understand time constraints are one thing, or maybe people's micromanaging is another thing. But it seems like, you know, once you've got your groove, you just hit the stratosphere.
Well, OK, I appreciate that. I take that as a compliment, and I thank you for that. But no, never, because you can't do that when you write a film, because the next 2 seconds later, someone from a nice scene is getting murdered or something. So you have to change. As far as songs, and you just said, God, that song, there's a crazy story about that song you just mentioned that's on that album. No, I never really feel like that. But in a song, you may feel like, okay, you've got the words and the music and pretty much the structure of where an instrumental line or be or something like that. That may be a little different, but not because you said talking about films. No, I never get on that line, because a film changes up too many times, and you may have something at the beginning, and you hope, if you write something great at the beginning of a movie, and you hope that there's kind of a through line for that theme or that feeling, but it may turn out by the end of the movie, especially when you don't have a lot of time to think about these things, it turns out that doesn't work. It may work in the first 10 or 15 minutes, but not in the last 5 minutes. So I never feel like that. I'm always kind of, when I say on the edge, I'm on the edge, I think, you know, in a musically, in a good way. But I'm always into, I never feel like, oh, I'm just writing a cue or writing a song because I need another song for an album or another cue from a movie. I mean, I'm pretty focused on whatever I'm doing. That's just the way I am. Maybe other people are different. I'm sure they are. But that's the way I do it. It's never just kind of off the hook, you know, or just, you know, oh, I've done X amount today, so I only have to do a couple of more things. It's always, you know, I guess the answer is I'm musically passionate about whatever I'm doing.
Okay. I've heard it said that often in the writing process, you're sort of personalizing and taking all of the influences that you're exposed to, all the music you're interested in, and kind of putting it through your filter at whatever your instrument is when you're composing. Is that the same for you? And if so, who are your big influences, both in cinema, composing for film, and when you're writing songs?
Okay, all right. The thing is that you said you're absolutely right about the first thing you were talking about. I mean, I don't like, except that you said musical influences. No, it's all the influences in your life. I mean, I could give you 100 examples, and I won't, but it's not just musical. It's you see a scene and a character, and it reminds you of your grandmother. You know what I mean? Or anything. So that's that's like that. What was the second part, which I wanted to kind of push back on?
Who are your do you take your influences and
I don't know everybody, you know, everybody is my influence. I mean, I could say, well, I mean, I am and was a serious traditional classical conservatory graduate person, and you know, everybody, you know, it doesn't matter if it's the romantic composers or the more contemporary composers or the full French school with Ravel and Debussy and all. I mean, everybody I'm influenced by, and hopefully it shows up once in a while when I'm allowed to use it. And as far as songwriting, but it's never I'm imitating somebody. And songwriters, no, I mean, songwriters, although am I going to say, oh, I wrote this song, it sort of sounds like something. Yeah, something I heard, but I'm not conscious about that, you know? At all. And I never am trying to sound like something, but someone may hear something of mine and say, ooh, that sounds like so-and-so. Not necessarily a piece of music, but just the feeling of it. So that, and no difference in film scores or songs. I mean, I'm influenced by everything, but I'm never, and as far as, I'll go back to what I said when we first started talking a while ago, I was never interested really in films. I was interested in films like everybody else, but it wasn't like, ooh, this is something that I want to do. I had no interest in it at all. It's not that I had no interest, it just wasn't a thing. And you know, film composing kind of came into its own. I mean, they didn't even give guys credit. You look at the biggest films, there's no credit at the beginning. At the end, they're on a list. You know what I mean? They don't even get so that's how it's kind of now it's obviously come to the forefront, composing scores. So got a much more, you know, notoriety, you know, years ago, but it's different than it was. But, and I would go see a film and I'd hear the score, but I wasn't focused on it. It became more of a, when I first was interested, and started doing it, someone may look at my thing and I won't say the what you said when you held up that album, but you can go back that same amount of time and you will see my name on something really serious. And you'd say, that's absolutely impossible. There's no way in that year that he did that score, the score about the Kennedy assassination, 10 years before a film called JFK that John Williams wrote the score. Now, does that mean it was any good? It was actually fantastic. Not necessarily my end, but there's a whole story behind that. And then I didn't even write a score for another 10 years. And that the biggest, most incredible people around, you know, with a script written by Dalton Trumbo. I mean, all the Hollywood people, it was called Executive Action. But I kind of learned, got into it then, and got into film composing as like how, as a mathematical thing, how do you match the music to the picture? Now, like right here with these computers, I press a button, I press a tempo, boom, boom, boom. But they didn't have that then. You had to work with something called a click book and film streamers. And it was a whole different thing, and do it by literally mathematics. That's why these guys that wrote these scores years ago are unbelievable. I just don't know how they did it and catching every moment, you know, all those great Bernard Herrmann things and Hitchcock and all that stuff. I mean, there's a million examples, but the point is I was interested in the technology, how you did that. And I learned how to do it the old fashioned way. And then by the time I got back into it years later, everything had changed and everything was much easier, you know, to do it. Composer, if you were a big composer years ago, had something called a moviola. I won't even tell you how cumbersome that was. And you had reels of film and you had to thread the film up and the thing would get stuck. I mean, I wasn't doing it to have one of those, but it, you know, a whole different thing. Now it's a lot different and easier as far as the technology of it.
And do you think the technology making things easier, do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing? Because I know that certain musician friends of mine almost begrudge sometimes the younger generation. in air quotes, have it so easy, because things like EQ and compression, just from a music production point of view, is so much easier to wrangle with and get your head around nowadays than some of the hard learning we had to do with our ear training when we were young 20, 25 years ago. Is it the same
Yeah,
for
I mean
film?
it's got its good aspects and bad aspects. But not so much for the sonic thing, but just the idea that I can write a cue here now, and an hour from now I can play it and you really hear the cue. Whereas years ago you can hear nothing but a piano. And if there wasn't any piano, you got, oh, here's this idea. But that puts the composer in a bad situation, because that means these schmucks can come over and hear it and criticize it, and then you have to change it. So it's worked.
And then you're into that micromanagement stuff that you're not
Well,
keen
then
on that
you're
you mentioned before.
okay, but I got to be done tomorrow, so get out of my house so I can look at something, watch it.
It's
I
the
think
old, my dad always says, delegate results, not methods.
exactly.
And it's that
So
sort of thing, isn't it?
it's. And you know what? And I always, some of the people that do this work, and they're wonderful and brilliant musicians, maybe, or they have to have a certain kind of, no matter how great they are, a certain kind of personality that allows them to have a certain, intermingling quality and collaborating with the director that's really in feature films. In television, there's producers, but in feature films, it's always one person, really, the director, and who's hearing in his other ear from maybe producers and people at the studio. But you kind of got to be able to do that, or this is not going to work out. So you got to be have, yeah. And normally, I think if you just go over, you'll find that, those people are. They're pretty adaptable at dealing with personalities, because you have to be. And understandably, these directors, these guys, their whole lives depend on this stuff. The movie comes out and doesn't do anything, and they may never be doing another movie. Obviously depends on what it is in the situation.
Building on what you've just said about sort of having a pliable personality to be able to adapt to working with all the different types of people and characters in the industry. If you were talking to a room full of 18-year-old aspiring film composers, is that some of the sort of the major advice you'd try and impart onto them before they set off, or would you
No,
have
no,
other things?
no, you can't. No, you can't talk about anything like what I just said. That's not, no, you better, no, you better be a great musician. That's it. That's what I would tell them. But I don't, I used to tell them, and now I don't go anymore to tell them that. But no, you better be a great musician. No, you can't tell anybody about that. That's got to be here. Here's the situation. The situation is, for what I was just talking about, if you're lucky enough to be in the 0.005 percentage of people who get the chance to do something, okay, and then you go on to the next step and you do a score, and then you go on to the next one, blah blah blah, you better be able to not only be brilliant musically, that's a given. Now you're already in that small percentage I just said, then you got to be able to be adaptable enough, but there's nothing to deal with the guy who's coming through the door, who can be anybody. They're all, it used to be film directors, they used to be what, playwrights or theater directors. Well, that's no longer the case. These guys are whatever, directed a video, what I mean, it's just, so they're all different characters. They have different backgrounds, and they all came to their project that they're walking through the door with, that you've been hired to do, a different, from a different place. But as far, no, you can't. I mean, I could talk all day to a bunch of kids and say, you better learn how to be, no, what are you going to go to, like, a psychiatrist and learn how to deal with people? What, no, you just have to be instinctive with your music and have a certain instinct in your personality, which comes, like I said, from your upbringing and your background and your family and something that happened to you, that it's just, that's what it's about, all those things. But you can't teach it to anybody, And maybe you could be the biggest asshole in the world, but you have a certain, you know, and I'd like to say your music is so good that it doesn't matter, but it doesn't work like that. And it usually works out that those people who have those kind of relationships, which are few and far between, you all know it. The couple of people that always are, you know, whether it's Danny Elfman, it's Tim Burton, or John Williams and Steven Spielberg, or Alan Silvestri and Bob Zemeckis. I mean, these are kind of close relationships. They all work their asses off and their problems, but they obviously have an instinctive thing with that particular person that probably goes to when they're working with other people, and they just are able to do it, you know. But it's nothing, you can't teach that. And if you go over the history of any of these people and you find out how they got here, you'll find out what they don't have any. They may not have anybody. I mean, John Williams doesn't. They don't have a traditional musical. How are they writing that down? Hey, guess what? They not only write it down, they can't even read music. Does that mean they're not brilliant? No. Technology has happened and allowed certain people. We won't go into one, the big name that everybody loves to put down, which I never do because I think he's terrific. But they come to it a different way. And they have the kind of personality, the schmooze factor, even though that sounds like I'm using that in a negative way, I'm not. They're able to do their thing comfortably with the technology the way it is and present it and talk about it with this guy who may have spent 15 or 20 years, not in the making of the picture, but in development. I mean, the silliest pictures in the world, sometimes you think, oh, they threw this thing in, you know, 2 months ago, but it may have a 25-year history. They all have histories, these things, before someone greenlit it and it got made, because most of the things that are even greenlit in Hollywood, they'll go, they'll spend money, they'll cast it, they go on locations, and guess what? They never shoot it. It's crazy, but that's what happens. So you got to put it all together. And like I said, if you're in that small percentage of people who get the opportunity, you better be ready for it. And that's musically, personality-wise. I mean, I was happy that I had years in the record business dealing with different personalities. That was good for me before I told everybody off, you know, but, you know.
Well, Randy, you know, I met Frank Darabont once, and he said that his film, The Shawshank Redemption, sticks to you like chewing gum. Now, again, Steve and I, your music sticks to us. I think we can go to sleep just thinking about Kindergarten Cop or 6 Days, 7 Nights. But if I can say two things to you, your music, whether it is film or whether it is records, has heart and it's playful. Can I go to Pistol Packin' Melody? The beginning of the song is a little twinkling of keys, diddle-doo-doo, diddle-doo-doo, and then there's a saxophone. So how much of that is experimentation on the day? How much of that is you thinking, I need to do that as soon as we get in the studio? Like, how do you just inspire that greatness?
Oh, well, okay. That you're giving me an example of a song when I told you they want me to do kind of at that time, you know, like, hit singles, and that was something that, but there's nothing instinctive. That's all completely planned right at the piano, done, boom, done. There's no experiment. I didn't go in and experiment. I went in with a riff and I had it played on a, you know, that's certainly not one of my favorites, but that was meant to be something commercial. Whereas, there's nothing experimental about any of those albums. Those albums are playing every note on the piano exactly as, especially those early albums. They're all very specific. There's no experimenting at all. You know, that one was, is that on the funny kosher thing that you held up?
Yeah, it's on Prime Cuts. Second track.
That album, I mean, see, I could, we don't have time, but all my albums, whether anybody knows them or not, and most people don't, there's a story, you know? I wasn't selling a bit, and the musicians, now that album, I was trying to be commercial. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's And if you ever heard my first two albums, which you may not even know exist, do you have my first two albums?
Sorry.
No, you never even knew they existed. You think that you're showing me an album that's like my first album. No, that was my third album. So my thing on that album was to have production. You hear the strings, you hear this background singers. And so, okay. But the point is, there's no experimentation at all. I mean, I'm even trying to think it of the songs on that album, which I am. No, they're all exactly, every note, every nuance was written down and recorded. And that's an example. Now, I may have screwed around. I mean, I haven't heard the thing in ages, but the that sax of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, I mean, that was planned to be like that. Now, maybe it didn't fit in the register of a certain saxophone. I used another one, but that would have been about the experimentation, you know.
Well, it's a hook, and I gotta wonder, you know, when you get to the film side of it, like, how do you, are there hooks? Do directors say, hey, we need something from as soon as the title card drops, or even the
logo? No, directors say nothing. No, they don't say anything. You say a title card. If you're looking at a title card, you see when the title card drops, and you know what you have to do. But no, they don't really give you direction. They make their movie. They put in a very, very complex film score, attempt score, and that's what happens. They don't kind of tell you. You got to do it instinctively yourself, and you better be right. And like I said, you better be right and fast.
Yes, yeah.
But you don't. No. I mean, you may say they're hooks, but you don't write it to be a hook. You write it and then you say, oh, that's the theme of the film, you know. I mean, Kindergarten Cop, you say, you know.
Still lovely.
Now, you see, that thing, that's hard. You don't just come up with that because that's a hard one. You have this film that's a major score. That score is dead serious because you're dealing with a drug bust and you better play it seriously. And then you have this little romance, that funny, wonderful actress, pal, whatever her name was. And then you have the kids in the school and you have a little romance. And then the tension of the guy coming and finding the kids. And Ivan was, luckily, I had a bit of time on that. But the theme I just played you, don't just come up, it's like, well, what's the theme for that guy with all that stuff? Is it going to be based on the love theme? No. Is it going to be based on him as a cop and the action drug stuff? No. So that little thing I played you, which I do in my little show that I do, which I'll be doing in New York on St. Patrick's Day, I think. See that plug in there? It's something it's like you have to live with it. And a lot of times, if you don't have the time to live with the film, which you don't, you may not come up with something like that because it sounds sort of romantic and lyrical, but there's a certain quality of it that has to do with the kids. And then in the back when everything goes, but that's, you know, that's an example of something that's tough to come up with. You don't just come, I mean, you could come up with it. Somebody may come up with it in a second, but I didn't. So it took a while to come up with that theme. But there's a million themes in that film. There's all different kinds of stuff. And they're all serious about what they are, including the kids' theme in that school and that love theme and the way it comes in the end. But it's like nobody tells you to do it. You better like figure it out. And that was a rough one, you know. That was a rough one. But in the end, if you do those things and they're difficult and they come out right, then like they just don't last forever, which all these films do, which is a great thing about that period or any period. But now what goes on with the streaming and the cable and all that kind of stuff, whereas years ago, if a film you did, the score wasn't a big hit, no one really saw you know, I mean, you'd see it on the 11 o'clock movie Saturday. You know, now something different happened. It's called cable television, and then it evolved, and then all kinds of other stuff. But the point is that if you work on something like that and you really get it, then you hear it years later, and man, wow, it really, you know, you did something. I know what that added to that picture. It's just not a play. It's not a playful score, as you said before. I mean, I knew you were talking about that. What I'm saying is there's a playful part of it, but it's very little. And it's the other aspects of that picture that make the playful aspects of it, or the kids, that heightens it, because you're playing against the tension of the story. And that's the movie, you know, what it's about. It's about this guy trying to find his kid, you know, bad guy with a bad mother. That's what it's about. You know, it's not about Arnold Schwarzenegger. It becomes that. But anyway.
Sure.
Okay. It's really interesting, actually, that what you've just described, if we did a full 180 and did that the other way around, you instantly also reminded, what you were describing reminded me of the scene in Ghostbusters 2 when Peter and Dana are about to go out on a date, and the other three Ghostbusters turn up and try and convince them to go with them to go and look down in the underground at the slime.
Yeah.
And so there's this kind of witty banter going on between Bill Murray and Sigourney Weaver.
Oh.
And
oh,
there's all this really, da-da-da-da, you know, it's all very sweet and very staccato and plucky and humorous. And then it instantly transitions into the guys going down and finding the river of slime underground, where it's all very scary.
Yeah.
And it's the sort of opposite of what you've just described in terms of transitions. But it's something that it almost feels like a very Randy Edelman type of moment. From both Twins through to Ghostbusters 2, there's this sort of parity between the two. It's like, definitely the same
maybe
composer.
Yeah, maybe, even though I think they're different. And like, look, the Ghostbusters 2 thing is incredible, because only last year did Sony Classics release my score. It only took them 30 years. And they lost the score. So they didn't have it. They had part of it. Well, blah, blah, blah. That leads to other stories. But the point is, it was crazy, because they threw in all those songs, which they did because it was the sequel to the biggest comedy of all time, the first Ghostbusters, but they didn't make it, and it took years. And in the end, the whole movie is only my score. And yes, a couple of times the old song, or a couple of Bobby Brown songs, but they put all those songs in the end credit. And then when they released the soundtrack, there's none of my music. It's nothing. So it took them 30 years, and I had to put it together, but which I'm glad I did. And I'm glad that was the company that did it. But it's funny. I mean, you mentioned 6 Days and Seven Nights, another picture with Ivan, another really rough thing to do. But I it's like Kindergarten Cop. It was hard because of all the aspects of it, but they came together in the end. Those are difficult scores to do, that kind of stuff. They're big scores, but they were, you know, and Ivan, you know, unfortunately passed away this year, last year, but those were real work projects. You know, they weren't like happy experiences, but in the end, the result for me musically was wonderful, you know.
Well, which is the biggest feather in your hat? Because I go back and forth between Ghostbusters 2 and Kindergarten Cop, and there's something about the heaviness of the scene at the fair. And then the locker room scene, it's like, holy crap, how is this happening in the movie that we thought we were watching? You know, I mean, it was telegraphed, it was coming, but you know.
That's, I mean, I haven't seen these in a long time, but no, they were, you know, but I mean, high points mean high points of those movies or any movies, because I don't.
Well, what makes you the happiest over the years? You know, what do you think?
Oh, well, none of those movies at all. No, none of them at all. I mean, there are other movies that were not as visible as those, but that I think musically were interesting. Yeah. So I won't tell you. You'll have to get into them. You may be stuck on that period, that Ivan period. There was, you know, a lot more that was going on after that, or during that even. But No, I don't have any. I think of them as, you know, the experience between me and the director, not about the necessarily the popularity or the box office that a movie does. It's that relationship. And if it was good. And so there are some films that I just get a big smile on my face, but maybe nobody has seen them, you know. Very few that I did that people didn't see. But, you know, there are a couple of really musically interesting things, you know. And not that there's not interesting music in others, there are. But I think just because they had that such a high comedic profile with Ivan, they get kind of pigeonholed in a certain thing. And then if you listen to the music or to the soundtracks, all you got to do, you listen to my soundtracks on either of those, and you'll hear some stuff and you'll go, wow, you know, no one would ever guess. That's a cue from Kindergarten Cop or Ghostbusters 2, you know. Some of them, yes, but some of them, no.
Well, what happens between projects? I'm very curious, what happens leaving Twins, working, you know, you're a co-composer on this, you have a co-credit, and then you find out it's a hit. What happens between that and the next picture?
Okay, first of all, you're asking me about something a million years ago. So, there wasn't any co-composer on any of my films. I've never met or written with anybody else. And you'll say, gee, what about George Delarue, who's like only one of the greatest composers, or Trevor Jones on Last of the Mohicans? No, I was bought into those projects and have no idea what went on. Obviously, something was happening, and I was bought in and wrote so much music that they, obviously, at least as much as the... And it was me who left the other music in because I thought it deserved to be. But I never even met those other people, which may sound really odd. And those are two completely different kinds of movies. And people say, how the hell would that work? Well, guess what? It did. They're both monster hits. Years later, you know, they're two opposite things. And they see my name with somebody and say, boy, this guy is a wonderful collaborator. No, I never even met those people, you know, when I did it. I was just thrown in. That's more at the beginning of when I got into this stuff. But as far as what, then there is no answer. Lull between, at that time, there was no lull between projects. But even if there was, it's just like, you don't, for me, it's different. I mean, because now, especially like what has kind of uniquely evolved with me. I mean, I have this really unique career. So if I'm not like I'm doing an album now, then I'll at 5 o'clock today, I'll do a little work on a film. Then I go to New York, do my show. Then I go to Nashville. Then I go to London, do the score. So I'm just doing different things now, which I wouldn't have done years ago when I was just doing films. And now I'm just doing everything and having a sort of a blast, you know. And nobody comes to my door, by the way.
Nice.
I point them towards something that no one uses anymore, the phone.
Nice. So I guess you've just got a lot of plates spinning and you're quite happy to just keep them spinning. Yeah, and when one plate doesn't need looking out for a day or two, you spin the other plates.
Oh, well, yeah, but it's not. No, I'm doing them all. I know exactly, like I know, like right now, I'm wasting time with you guys, and I'm writing string parts, which I hadn't done. I don't write anything down because everything comes out of this thing, but I'm writing with a pencil. I've never even done this. I mean, I haven't done this in years, and I'm writing some string parts because do I have to write them? Could I do the strings like I was with my stuff? Blah, blah, blah. I feel like doing it. So I'm writing this stuff. Then I will blah, 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 have it copied. Then Monday I'll do that. Then I'll come back here, write a couple of more cues for this funny kind of movie I'm doing. And then I'll go and do my show in New York, which is, where are you guys, by the way?
I'm in Texas.
Oh, and shit. Fuck you. You should be my show.
I'm in Southeast England.
Well, if you're Southeast England, well, then you got to come to the Crazy Cock. You know what that is?
Where's that?
Oh, okay.
Is that in London?
Get your shit together and come see my show at the end of May. It's an unbelievable place. Right in London. right in the West End. Couldn't be more, you know, so
awesome.
Get it together. And it's fun. The Crazy Cock, look it up. May 31st. I only do a show on Saturday nights at 9:30 anywhere, New York or London. That's it. If it's not at that time, it's not me.
Well, okay. I saw a video of somebody recorded some of you doing your performance at the Chelsea Theater. And
that's really bad. That's bad because they shouldn't be doing that, and they stream it or something, and the quality is bad, you know.
Well, it was more about the story. And I think that, you know, I think that people should hear this thing firsthand. So yes, buy your tickets to the St. Patrick's Day and buy your tickets to the Crazy Cock. But you have this story about Adam Sandler, and I wonder if you would mind sharing that.
Okay, that's okay. That's okay. I'll do that, and then we're out. Okay.
unless we could do a better one. I mean, something. Steve, do you want to ask something better? Randy, you have a better one?
No. I'm quite curious to hear about Adam Sandler.
I have. Okay. That's not a great. Okay. It sounds like it's a good story, but first of all, it has to be set up. When I do these, I do two. Obviously, most of the stuff, I'm sitting up there for 2 hours with just a piano, so I'm doing songs. But for part of it, I do two medleys. These are serious medleys of my film scores. One's called the ha-ha medley, that's obviously comedies. One's called the non-ha-ha medley, and that's Dragonheart and Anaconda and Mohegans and Gettysburg and all that stuff. But I do them at the piano, very specific pianistic arrangements, and I'm playing my ass off, okay? This is about piano playing, big time, okay? That's what it's about. And not that I aren't with the songs, too, but this is featuring that's the only reason I do this whole show, is basically because of my piano playing. Okay, so at the end of the ha-ha medley, the last thing I do is a piece of music that is crazy. And the story is, so after I had been doing the scores and mainly the comedies, all the ones you reacted to and talking about, I was loving it, but I didn't think I was particularly funny, and certainly my music wasn't. I didn't think it was funny. So I wanted to turn my ship around and do, quote, more serious fare, you know. Now, that's not as easy to say it now, but that's not easy to do. What do you need? You need someone making a serious movie. I mean, a really good serious movie that's going to hit everybody over the head when you do it. And they're suddenly like, holy shit, this guy is blah, 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 you know. So it's not that easy. You can say you're going to do it and say, oh, you're doing all these films. Everybody knows who you are. No, try to get someone to call you, you know, to do a serious stuff. So anyway, that's the period I was in when I get a call. And this guy says, hey, Randy, this is blah, blah, blah. I'm going to send my film over. I want you to do the score. And I have to say to this guy, you know what? I really appreciate it. And I did. However, I got to make a change. And I'm not doing any more comedies. And I knew it was especially yours. I didn't say that to him. This guy hadn't done another film, like a big that he was starring in, I don't think. And it didn't matter anyway. I just was. So I told him, don't send it over. Blah, blah, blah. We talked. Finally, I said, okay, I'll tell you what. I'm on the phone. Now, this is the day. I'm not going to say they weren't on cell phones. Of course they were. But we were on the regular phone. And I said, listen, I had just seen that when I tell the story in my show, I don't reveal what you did, so no one knows who I'm talking about. And I say, listen, about a year ago, I heard you do something on Saturday Night Live. It was a song. It's called the Hanukkah Song, and I thought it was really brilliant. And I said, if you can give me like 30 seconds of that song, I will. I didn't say I'd do your film. I'll let you send it over and I'll look at it. Well, within 3 seconds, all of a sudden, this guy's doing the Hanukkah song, okay, on the phone. So I said, Jesus, and it was great. And next day I get the film. I see the film. It's this, you know, when I say the dumbest thing, really just really off the wall. And I called him back. I said, listen, I saw the film, you know, it's really dumb. He said, yeah, that's why I want you to do it. I said, well, if you don't bother me, because I've already given you a little bit of that history. I said, okay, and when do you need it? Okay, don't bother me. I'll see you in 6 weeks in front of the full orchestra. And he was completely good to his word, and he never came over. Then, but at the beginning of the picture, it was so ridiculous, I wrote something crazy. And my plan was that I would go in, this is with the full orchestra, and then I would do this crazy thing I wrote. But of course, I had an alternate that was going to be the real one. I was just going to do it as a joke. And now, you see, I'm telling you all this, and it doesn't work because you have to hear what I did in order to understand this joke. And so in my show, it's a real crazy ragtime thing, and I do a funny thing in the show. Anyway, so I get done with that, and I already had it planned. I'm going to turn around to all these producer stuff behind the glass and the control room, and I'm going to say, just joking. And then they're going to put the picture up and we're going to do the real thing. But of course, when I turned around with his face pressed up against the glass with his hand like this, fantastic, was Adam Sandler. And that's the opening of his movie. So I never got to milk his name with that. Now, it was a little different now. It doesn't sound, it gets a major laugh. But the reason it gets a major laugh is what I said before. It's because of my piano playing. The way I play this, it's wild what I do. And it's like, really, people don't see people play like that. It's ragtime, but it's really crazy musically. So that's it. That's the story. Okay, guys, I love you.
Thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Randy.
The St. Patrick's Massacre, New York. I play you out with...